Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you are listening to Financial Survival. My co-host today is Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It is Monday, April 27th. Are we still in the year 2020?
I'm afraid so.
Oh, jeez. Okay, 2020. We're not in 21 yet? Oh, could have fooled me. Could have fooled me. Anyway, thank you for joining the program today, and good afternoon, Dave.
Hello, Melody.
Oh, boy. I'm going to be so happy that April is over, and you know, you get to a certain age, and you don't want to wish those days away. You need to appreciate them no matter what. But I'll tell you, it certainly has seemed like a very long 2020 so far. Maybe that's a good thing if you're old. Mm-hmm. Stretching those days out. We always wondered how we could slow down time. Let's see what gold is. It was slowed down a little bit today, down $13.40 in the New York spot price aftermarket, $17.17. Silver is down 5 pennies at $15.32. Platinum was down 3 at $768. Palladium was down $48 at $2,028. USDX today was down 0.22, but still holding 100.01. Crude oil was down another $3.88 at $13.06. And the paper markets today, I guess they're getting their Monday primed up for the week when earnings begin to start flowing, and because they had a positive day today, up 358 points at 24,133. NASDAQ was up 95 points at 8,730. S&P was up 41 points at 2,878. Wasn't the peak on the S&P, wasn't that close to what was the peak on the S&P? Do you remember, Dave?
I do not.
And I think the NASDAQ was close to approaching 10,000, I believe. The Dow was close to approaching 30,000. 10-year yield, 0.66. I was up just slightly, 0.06. We do have one oil company, Diamond Offshore. They're filing for bankruptcy. There's going to be many more following that. The euro was 108, a little bit positive. Foreign markets were all very strong. I think bunch of central banks are meeting this week, as ours is also. I guess he's going to come out with some sort of isn't it a little late in the month for them to be meeting? Isn't that usually a little bit earlier than the very last week, Dave?
Or? Yeah, that's I'm not sure how they coordinated their calendars this year, but it is usually a week or two later. We're used to seeing it closer in the middle of the month.
Right, yeah. That's what around the 24th or 25th, something like that. But anyway, so that was pretty much it. You know, all eyes, of course, have, you know, discussed what's going on with the virus and so forth. But I don't know if we have anything here, but I just want to bring this up, Dave. I was talking to a client. He's out of Missouri, and we were talking about the food shortage, and he says the ranchers, he says it's just unbelievable with what's going on and how they're shutting down, how these places are shutting down and everything. And today there's a big old headline out of Bloomberg saying Americans on cusp of meat shortage. The food chain is breaking down. We've been talking about it here for, what, a month or more? And now it's beginning to actually have a little bit of impact when you have these plants that are shutting down. So we'll have to see what the disruption in the meat. We've already had meat shortages at the grocery store. Farmers are facing the likely culling of millions of animals in mass burial graves that could be dug across the heartland. The food supply chain is breaking. That's from Tyson Foods. Outbreaks are forcing the closure of some of the country's biggest slaughterhouses where tens of thousands of animals are processed daily. As the plants shutter, producers are left with nowhere to sell their livestock. can't give them away. It's forcing farmers to make gut-wrenching decisions to dispose of their animals. The situation is so severe that the U.S. government is setting up a center partly to assist on depopulation and disposal methods, getting that used to, and then they can just change it from animals to people. They'll have this system already set up as a way to depopulate and dispose. Millions of pounds of meat will disappear. And, you know, we can look at the problems of why this is happening when we look to see who owns these companies. You look at Smithfield, the owners, who they hire, the people that process them. And, you know, you see this virus that is just consuming these plants. You look at the problems. But we still import a lot of our food. All they'd have to do is maybe stop importing all this food, you know, and maybe it wouldn't hit us so hard. Quit selling out our food processing to foreigners. And it's, anyway, it's just part of the problem.
Or better yet, it's a good time for America to go on a plant-based diet. How about that?
Yeah. Maybe we should all be vegans. But it is a sad situation in the wealthiest country in the world. And, but maybe these things will wake people up and say, gee, why do we have this problem? Why weren't we a little more prepared? And maybe we won't continue to sell out the heart of America. You know, I guess there's, I don't know. Everything is all about the virus. Manufacturing. Some believe the worst for manufacturing in Europe and the U.S. may be behind us. I find that hard to believe. Only those who want the stock markets to go high are going to say things like that. The gradual reopening of the German economy and for the hard-hit Italy to allow a resumption of work by export-focused manufacturing companies are both encouraging for Europe. What about here, Dave?
Well, in the U.S., there are some tentative signs of a return to work for some industrial employers, and the auto industry's transatlantic links are looking more ready to restart as soon as we see that Volkswagen announced last week that workers at its sprawling plant in Chattanooga, Tennessee would start to return to work in phases beginning next Sunday. Now, that doesn't mean there won't be more turbulence ahead, because for sure there will be, and a lot of it. The CEO of Airbus, which says its supply chain supports 275,000 jobs in 40 American states, said the challenges ahead threaten the very existence of our company. It's a lot of employees. And third, the economic carnage in the U.S., it isn't over. Labor Department report this Thursday is expected to show another 3.5 million American workers filed first-time claims for unemployment benefits during the past week. Such a wave will take the total number of American workers who've lost their jobs in the past 6 weeks to a grand total of 30 million. I mean, just to compare, the entire population of Texas is 29 million people. We're in strange times, ladies and gentlemen. The woods are deep, and we're not out of them yet.
No, we're not. And excuse me. And we're not... We're not sure how many people will go back to work. I had that conversation today. You know, people are, well, you know, until we know what's going on with this bug, well, I'm not going back to work. But they have bills to pay. So it'll be interesting to see what how the different phases when it's opened up. I mean, I hope everyone can go back to work and no one will be hurt. But I kind of think that the way this thing has been unfolding, that might not be the case. And You know, it will be a new way of life. And Dave, not to make light of this, but I did see a funny Facebook thing the other day, because you have hairdressers that are now allowed to go back to work, and I know your daughter, and it showed a patron at the had the head in the shampoo bowl, and then you saw the tape that went around the shampoo bowl and the chair where the patron was sitting, the customer was sitting, and it was back 6 feet. And all of a sudden, you saw a bucket of water being thrown on her head to wash her hair. And I thought it was cute. Then they had a long mop in order to wash their hair. So it was kind of cute. And
I saw a similar one this morning. The hairdresser was cutting her client's hair behind an umbrella that she had cut holes through. So she'd get her scissors and clippers through it. funny, a little levity in one hand, in my mind, shows how ludicrous some of these governors' decisions are already, like in Georgia. There's no way that tattoo parlors and barbershops and hairdressers should be reopening right now. And, you know, obviously a decision is going to be made state by state, but I don't know what smelling salts they've been sniffing down there, Melody.
Well, the thing of it is they're opening up with all these, with the certain criteria they have to follow, and most of them can't follow it.
Well, you can't. That's the point.
You know, yeah. And it's just like, if you're going to open it, then open it. Let these people work. And, you know, we all take our own responsibility, you know, if you want to be safe, you take the precautions in order to be safe, you know, and if it gives that person that wants to go get their hair done because they're tired of looking at the little bit of gray that grew out, well, you know, they can go. You know, it's up to them also to protect themselves. So, I mean, it's individual responsibilities also, and that's something that, you know, Americans don't seem to have anymore, or very little of it. Or for some, you know, Dave, I think it's, you can debate both sides, and there's probably a little bit of right on both sides, but it really should be.
There's more right on one side than the other, in my humble opinion.
Well, you know, and I just, you know, and if you don't want to go out and get ill, then you stay at home. It's an easy choice. But,
and you hope you're not, you're not gonna, your employer, if you're the employee who decides not to go back to work, that there's not going to be retaliation by your employer.
True.
We're seeing that in some other levels that we might get to later on in the program, but.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, that there shouldn't be. And, you know, and I think these employers should be held responsible for making it a safe, you know, for the employee as well as the client. But, I mean, I just can't imagine, Dave, families of four with no money coming in, young families with mortgages and if there's, you know, when we're looking at food shortages and the prices, do you know what happens to prices if there's food shortages? Look at the premiums on gold. We can't get gold and silver. Now equate that to food. I can't imagine the amount of stress. You know, and all we see on you know, lots of times on Facebook and TV are the funny things, or, you know, how people are surviving. You know, they're creative in their videos and YouTubes and things like that. But I cannot imagine not having an income. And I can remember those days, but there was always something you could go to. And these people don't have a chance to go to anything. Moving on, Dave, the oil. We saw oil plunge again about 25% on fears that the worldwide storage is soon going to fill. As, you know, economies don't need the oil. West Texas Intermediate for June fell 25%. That was this morning. The international benchmark, the Brent crude, traded 8.1% lower. And each contract is coming off its eighth week of losses in 9 weeks. WTI for July delivery fell more than 11%. August contracts slipped more than 7%, all suggesting that investors don't see a meaningful recovery in the next few months. You know, the storage clock is ticking for the producers, and analysts believe we're approaching the final countdown. So it's oil and storage rose about 10% in a week to 59.7 million barrels, about 25 million barrels shy of capacity, Dave.
I mean, with prices at such depressed levels, WTI and Brent have dropped 72 and 68% this year so far, respectively. Producers are struggling to break even. Yesterday, Houston-based Diamond Offshore Drilling filed for bankruptcy protection, and analysts say that more bankruptcies in the industry could be coming. We know a week ago, WTI plunged into negative territory for the first time in history, as holders of the contract for May delivery scrambled to sell their contract just as it was set to expire on Tuesday. But with oil demand not expected to recover anytime soon, and with nowhere to store oil, there's no buyer on the other side. In the end, contract holders actually had to pay to have it taken off their hands. Go figure. And traders are saying the same fate could befall the June contract as it approaches its expiration in the middle of May, May 19th. One analyst, Paul Sankey, told his clients, "We will hit the negative 100 barrels per day." Or actually, he asked, "Will we hit the $100 per barrel a day next month?" To which he answered, "Quite possibly." Another analyst, Michael Sue, said prices won't rebound until there's a meaningful recovery in demand. And that right now, Melody, gosh, it just seems a long way off.
Yeah. Well, one thing that had a little bit of recovery is new home sales. Home sales, hit the ground to a halt at the end of March, but it does seem to be coming back a little bit. In the initial 4 weeks of the national shutdown, sales of newly built homes fell 85% from normal spring activity by the fourth week. In the past 2 weeks, the numbers did start to climb, but it's still down roughly 65%. And there's also comments that renters are leaving their apartments looking to buy new homes.
Yeah.
Can't figure that one out. But anyway, one thing I can figure out is we're heading into the break because I do hear the music. And you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cedarstrom here with Dave Allen, and we'll be right back.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cedarstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cedarstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk CommonSenseTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Visit the website, dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for a weekly newsletter. And I'm not going to make any announcements until it's done. But look for an announcement on our website soon, I hope. Right, Dave?
Indeed.
Okay. Central banks, we all know about central banks. We all know the amount of pressure they're under to support the economies while their economies are shut down. And we've seen rates, record lows. We've seen central banks pledging to spend just trillions of dollars on asset purchases, and they're doing a fine job. The Federal Reserve, Bank of Japan, European Central Bank, which together cover almost half of global output, all convened meetings of their policymakers this week after turmoil in the financial markets. The Bank of Japan set the tone today by scrapping a limitation on buying government bonds and ramped up its purchases of Japanese corporate debt. Governments this week seek to confirm multi-year expansions. Monetary policymakers may believe they have to do more to limit the recession. Among the options are extending quantitative easing. You've heard that before, haven't you? Helping ease credit, to troubled businesses. Chief economist Tom Orlick at Bloomberg Economics, he says they expect the ECB to expand its pandemic emergency purchase program. So official. They don't want to call them bailouts. It's the pandemic emergency purchase program. Good grief. And most people have no idea what that means, and they really don't care what it means until it's too late. And as I mentioned earlier, we got the Fed meeting tomorrow and Wednesday. So, think they're going to cut rates, Dave?
Oh, man. Well, hey, I'm not sure there'll be any more cutting. They're going to have to be in the right frame of mind to. I mean, they're already at zero on the bottom end of the range. They've rolled out a series of emergency and, frankly, unorthodox lending products designed to prop up particularly the stock market and to keep credit flowing to businesses. As we told you last week, the Fed's balance sheet's approaching $6.6 trillion as we speak. That's up from $4.2 on 12/31/19 and $2.2 trillion just a short but oh so long 10 years ago. Now, economists in one survey have limited expectations for any certainly substantial changes at this week's meeting. If there are any changes at all, I suspect it will be in the language in terms of the forecast that Jerome Powell will roll out in his press conference after the meeting adjourns on Wednesday. Now, large majorities of these economists who are surveyed leading up to Fed meetings, about 90% said they didn't expect the Fed's Open Market Committee to offer any additional guidance on how long they intend to keep rates near zero or on the future pace of its essentially infinite asset purchases. But again, investors will be looking for the words. the semantics from Jerome on just how deep the Fed fears this recession will go, and as well as its outlook for any type of recovery.
You know, it's interesting. I don't know why investors would be looking for any indication. I mean, they haven't even... We're not, as far as they're concerned, we're not in a recession yet. So I don't know how they can expect the Jerome Powell to say how long it's going to last. Right? Have they actually said we're in a recession yet?
Well, the...
Or have they?
The NBER hasn't.
Right.
However, you know, there are more and more, certainly a number of economists, mainstream economists, say that we're now, it's beyond a manufacturing recession, and that based largely on the jobless claims over the past 5 weeks, since we haven't seen the first quarter GDP numbers yet, that there'll be more than a consensus when they come out next month. I find it interesting that the central bankers, the Fed, still being lobbied from some members of Congress to allow more cities and counties to borrow from their funds. It's an interesting, I guess they're not too confident, perhaps, that the Senate will agree to in negotiations that are going on right now for the next relief bill, looking for between $500 and $750 billion in additional funding for states and municipalities. So, the ECB president Christine Lagarde told her folks last week that they may have done too little, too late anyway. She's warning that the Eurozone economy could shrink by as much as 15% this year, and yet they still failed to agree on how to structure their recovery funds. So it's getting crazier as we speak, Melody.
Before we head into the 2020 deficit, we have a caller. We have Scott from New Mexico. Good afternoon, Scott. Thank you for calling the program.
Hello, hello, friends.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
Hey, you got hi. Hi. You know, we've got a repeat, and the powers that be rely on our short memory. And here we go again, another version, part 2.0 of kicking the can down the road. This time with potential bail-in. So strike that last zero off your bank account if it comes to that. But the argument is they didn't fix anything, and we get crumbs, and it all goes to the banks. Oh, at all costs, let's keep the banks afloat. Well, they're the rotten you-know-whaters that exasperated the issue. Mm-hmm. Back in 08, 09. But they just depend on us for getting it, and they pull it on us again. It's just an insultation of our intelligence. Frankly, I'm sick and tired of it, because I think there's enough Americans that remember they had the same game plan. You know, another thing, you know, so, I don't know, maybe this kind of sounds crazy, but when you think of some of the names of some of these people that run the money in our system, the appointees, and I think Trump's made some horrible appointees, though I voted for him, he's the lesser of two evils. But you think of people like Lagarde. Well, what is she guarding us from? And you think of Powell. He's got the power. Powell. I mean, there's a whole bunch of names that are consistent with. I know it sounds funny, it sounds nuts, but it just seems to pan out this way. And frankly, I'm sick of this stuff. Why don't
that's
they just
funny.
Leave it alone and let it fix itself? If they would let these big entities fail, then we could get a free market back. But oh no, they've got to boost it up with your on your dime, see?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's all your dollar's worth is a dime. Anyway, what do you think of that stuff?
Well, I mean, you're absolutely correct, Scott. I mean, of course, as a, you know, it's people do have short memories. I say that all the time. People just don't remember, and they go on to the next thing, and yeah, they kind of count on it. And this is the same thing again, bailing out. But I don't think this time is going to work. I think we're at the end of the road of kicking the can down, and unfortunately, there's going to be severe consequences because we've kicked the can down this far. And we haven't seen anything played out as yet. And we're talking about the trillions. What?
Oh, I was going to ask you there. I'm sorry. Go ahead. I wanted to ask you a question, though, in regard to this.
I mean, we haven't seen anything really being filtered down from these decisions. That, I mean, nobody really talks about. I mean, we talk about the Fed's, you know, $6.6 trillion, but every night they're in the markets, in the repo markets, buying assets. I mean, doing everything possible to keep the system going. There for a while, I've known people who, you know, there were certain mortgage companies they weren't funding. They're beginning to loosen up now, and I think that's why you're beginning to see the new home sales begin to increase. But, I mean, if there's another relapse of this virus and it looks like we have to face the same thing again. I mean, no, and we're in an election year, so all kinds of things are going to happen this year. We haven't seen the icing on the cake yet.
Did you see? No, absolutely not. It hasn't peaked yet. It's all on us. They never foil. They are never. They never stumble. They always slide right on through, and we're the beneficiaries of their enrichment.
We pay for it. Yep.
While we lose it, we get burnt. And I'm just so sick of this stuff. I just was hoping the free market would shine through, and we could get a real sound money system in there. Forget digital. That's a pipe dream. The electricity goes out. You lost your wallet, you know, or whatever that is with that. You know, I have no use for that. It's tangibles. Here, I need to call you and set something up because I'm a little tired of my old 22-year-old standard company, and I think you and I can do some business. But anyway, thank you
both. All
right,
give me a call, Scott.
You place. I appreciate you both very much, and you nailed it.
We appreciate your listenership and for calling in too, Scott.
Oh, I go back way before, you know, back in the Bob Chapman days. You know, absolutely.
Yep. Thanks for your ongoing loyalty.
Well, you know what it is. The government is so corrupt. I mean, you know, the big headlines today was Carnival Cruise, and it just goes to show it isn't. It's all the same. It doesn't change. Carnival Cruise gets the big bailout. They were able to raise $6 billion in bond markets with reduced interest rates. Jim Cramer, and I'm not a fan of Jim Cramer, but he was reacting to the Wall Street Journal piece detailing how Carnival was able to benefit with their longtime pal Mickey Arison, which is run by who runs Carnival, is a longtime pal of President Trump. Carnival was a sponsor of The Apprentice for years. And it's like it's just the same thing. Doesn't matter what president, doesn't matter what side, the same thing over and over and over again. Well, and this just shows you that things haven't changed.
Well, one thing that has, I'm afraid, you know, we often talk about, I hate to use the term, the dummying down of America over the years by, you know, not doing some of our own independent thinking or whatever, but I think more than that, we've seen the numbing down of America that over the last few decades, and it's now going on five, I'm afraid, at least four, just because of Congress's actions and inactions. I think the consensus, the individual consensus among most Americans, is that I can't fight City Hall. I can't fight particularly the halls of Congress. You know, maybe now in the days of social media, I can express some of my feelings, how disconcerted I am with the political process, you know, with an occasional Facebook post or a tweet if you're a tweeter. But I think that this numbing down is, especially in concert with the dummying down, but I think more than anything, the numbing down is what, to me, gives me the most long-term concern about the state of our democracy, or at least our democratic republic. And, you know, we've talked, haven't talked for a long time about things like, term
our
limits.
Constitution republic, but go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I agree with you. And, you know, and how do we change it around? I mean, it's going to be a big smack in the face. It's going to be a big smack in the face when people go hungry.
Economic reset. Yeah.
When people go hungry and they can't feed the babies, that is when it changes. And if we do have the food shortages, which they're addressing all the problems. We've had problems. I mean, we've had an increase when we begin to see the prices beginning to increase. That's when people should be waking up, and when they don't have a job to go back to where they can feed, even whether the food's there or not. And it's always been such a short term, because they've been in there to come in and bail everybody out to where it was short lived. And we'd all be better off today if they would have just left the things fail that failed. But they couldn't do that. They wouldn't do that for Wall Street, for the banks, and the cruise line. Why should the cruise lines get bailed out? They make billions of dollars. Where are the billions of dollars that they make? Let them bail themselves out. We'll be right back. We're heading into a break. Please stay tuned.
Just one more time. Oh, won't you tell me again? Oh, can you feel it? Oh, won't you tell me again tonight? Each and every heart is
food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. There was a small business owner survey, and actually it was the too big to fail Goldman Sachs. They completed this survey of 1,800 small business owners in the United States. Here's what they found. 39% of small businesses are fully open. 42% are partially open. 19% are temporarily closed, and with the crisis forcing them to lay off 37% of employees. As far as a payment, the Payroll Protection Loan Program goes, 91% of small business owners say they applied for the funds. 52% received loan approval. And the sad fact, only 29% have actually received funding. 77% of those approved are confident their business will survive. 68% of business who have been approved for PPP funds said they'll be able to retain 75 to 100% of their payroll over the next 8 weeks. And, so that's an optimistic report, I think.
Well, interestingly, almost all of them say the crisis is going to impact the way their businesses will operate in the future.
Yeah.
And 69%, over two-thirds, do say large operators in whatever their industry is are going to have a bigger advantage over smaller businesses than was in effect before the pandemic. And over two-thirds, 68%, say they'll likely change their business model. So...
Just before we move on to Texas manufacturing, but you know what? The small business, you know what? In a situation like this, I'd rather go to a smaller place than a bigger place.
Oh, well, absolutely. All other things being equal. I mean, different people look at things differently.
But, I mean, who wants to be around all those other people in the bigger places? You have more people going in and out.
Yeah. Well, in the age of e-commerce and online purchasing, you know, people often just want to get in and get out, and are very probably more price sensitive than they ever have been. But boy, if ever there's a time to support your local your local business, now is the time.
Tell us about Texas manufacturing, Dave.
Well, the Dallas Fed's gauge of manufacturing tumbled to a record low last month. Dallas Fed said today that its general economic index decreased to minus 70. It's the lowest reading back to 2004. And it's down from plus 1.2 in February. Readings below zero indicate contracting activity. Now, it's important to note that that's a picture of Texas manufacturing, but Texas being one of our largest states in terms of population and in terms of number of manufacturers, that's an important figure. You have regional Fed banks in New York, Philly, Kansas City as well showed record monthly declines in that area, Melody.
You know, here's another state, and this is no big surprise. I mean, you have New Jersey, they're heading for bankruptcy as long as if McConnell has his way. But they're beginning to, their revenues have fallen off the table. Their costs are going up serving people who have lost their jobs, small businesses that have been crushed. Folks who are in the healthcare system, And, you know, New Jersey officials had previously signaled that the state could begin to experience a cash crunch in 4 to 6 weeks. Asked whether that could mean an inability to pay teachers, police officers, Murphy said, the governor, that's exactly what he's talking about. He said he hoped the federal government would ultimately approve more financial assistance to state and local governments. And, you know, this is going to be a pretty big debate along the way. And I know there's been some bipartisan effort from Senator Bob Menendez of New Jersey and Republican Senator Bill Cassidy of Louisiana to establish a $500 billion assistance fund for state and local governments. You know, and that's something, too. You know, here it is, federal taxes paying for state and local governments, you know. Why do I have to help pay New Jersey because they weren't good handlers of their money or have a rainy day fund for situations? And so it's kind of like, I don't know.
Well, to a lot of these states and municipal boards, councils, commissions, assemblies, and so forth, you know, a lot of them, in fact, do have substantial rainy day funds. Some don't. Some are very... Some have not used the good times to build up fund balances, surpluses, rainy day funds. And they obviously are the ones who are going to suffer greatly. But unfortunately, this coronavirus doesn't look at end-of-the-year surpluses or deficits. And it's going to hammer or hammering most states. I don't know, haven't seen figures for cities and townships recently, but I'm sure altogether it's going to be a substantial impact on both employment, local government services.
What irritates me is they just want money. They want money from the federal government. They want money for this. But do they say, well, you know what, give us some money, but this is what we're going to do. You know, we're going to have to cut this. We're going to have to change that. We're going to have to do this. And no, nobody does that.
Well,
I don't know if nobody is fair.
I don't know that the term nobody is a fair one. But I do know that Congress certainly has the ability, just as they have with the small business and big business loans and grants that they've issued so far, is that you can attach conditions. I mean, just as, you know, big business can't who take any funding, relief funding, can no longer buy back shares of their stocks, for example, for a year after they receive it. I mean, there can be restrictions attached to any legislation that opens up more funding to states and localities. I hear you about some just wanting a handout or needing a handout.
They do the same thing as what these large investment firms do.
Well,
they're gonna lobby.
Oh, sure. They've for $500 billion. Yeah, that's there's a lot at stake there. Boeing CEO Dave Calhoun told shareholders today that air travel demand won't recover for another 2 to 3 years. That's just one more challenge for the American manufacturer that was already reeling from the 737 MAX grounding before this pandemic became headlines. And travel in the U.S. is about 5% of what it was a year ago, and airlines have parked more than a third of all of their fleets combined and are planning to defer orders of new planes. Boeing's scheduled to report their first quarter results before the market opens on Wednesday. I expect a big reaction from investors, and I don't think it's going to be positive. What do you think, Melody?
Do you think they'll pull them out of the Dow before Wednesday?
Interesting.
When are they going to replace them? But, you know, we were talking about how these investment firms, they spent $3 million to lobby for relief the world's largest investment firms. You got Blackstone, you got Carlyle Group, SoftBank. You've heard us talking about these guys over the years. Bob Chapman used to talk. They're all part of the elite. They're all part of the and they took aim, you know, lobbying for the part of the $2 trillion stimulus package that was signed into law back in March. We know Blackstone already hailed a huge contract with government. So it worked. Business as usual. They're still there. The swamp is full. It's got more water and critters in there than they did 4 years ago. Good grief. CVS and UPS, they're going to start using drones. Dave, I don't know why they think they're going to start using drones next week to deliver prescription medications to residences in a Florida retirement community. Amazon, one of the biggest delivery companies in the world, they were going to try drones, and they weren't successful, were they? Or do they actually still use drones? So I don't know why CVS, United Parcel Service, believes they'd be able to do a better job than Amazon, but...
I don't know. Maybe they have a different manufacturer of drones.
Mm. So there you go, listeners in Florida. Be careful when you look up. You might get a package dropped on your head or something.
But watch your head. They're not necessarily COVID-infused bats.
Supreme Court rules government owes $12 billion to insurance companies. Do you want to touch on that one, Dave, briefly?
Well, yeah, sure. In non-virus news, Supreme Court ruled today that the government has to pay a $12 billion debt owed to health insurance companies that participated in a program that existed in the early years of the Affordable Care Act. Court voted by a rare 8-1. Margin to allow insurance companies to seek payments owed to them via Obamacare's Risk Corridors program. The 2010 law essentially called for the Department of HHS to pay insurers who suffered losses under the program between 2014 and 2016 while taking payments from those that made large profits. So I'm sure that the Department of Treasury is not going to be happy about that one, Melody.
We have our, you know, this with all the job losses, 30 million. 30 million. That's, everybody thinks everybody's going to go back to work next month. I mean, there's other parts of this situation that just isn't going to come back. And I think you mentioned that. And your article today, Dave, that you wrote about is how it is having the harshest impact on some of America's lowest wage earners.
Well, Melody, it shouldn't come as a surprise to most people, but Americans who make the least amount of wages, those who are least able to afford it, are taking the biggest hit by far from the coronavirus-induced shutdown of our economy. Economist Mark Zandi of Moody's Analytics observed the largest body blows are to the travel industry, the retail industry, and parts of the healthcare industry that are on the front lines battling the virus. And by that, he means the people working in those industries. So generally, they're lower-paying jobs, so the folks in the bottom part of the income distribution are going to get creamed by this.
You know, I don't think it's any surprise to anyone that you've heard it said that we're heading into the, it's going to be the Great, Great Depression. Not recession, but depression.
Well, the biggest hit from the at least 26 million Americans who filed for unemployment benefits so far, and the other 3.5 or more that are expected this week, been working in hotels, bars, and restaurants. On again, off again, on again. White House economic advisor Kevin Hassett warned over the weekend that unemployment's going to hit levels not seen since the Great Depression. Now, he said unemployment rate could hit 16%, and the next couple of months are going to be terrible for economic data. And his unemployment estimate pales in comparison to what a number of his peers are predicting, well over 20%. Hassett said, during the Great Depression, we lost about 9 million jobs in the whole thing. Now we're losing that many every 10 days. So the lift for economic policymakers, he says, is an extraordinary one. He described the shutdown as the biggest negative shock that our economy has ever seen. Hmm. So,
anything else you'd like to add to that? We only have about 30 seconds.
The article talks about the St. Louis Fed study, again, that showed the biggest hit so far has been to the bottom fifth of wage earners. Talks about how the payroll protection program has proven little better on the equality front for small businesses. Melody mentioned about all the public companies applying for almost $1 billion from the PPP. And you've got one now, a big hotel group, saying, well, I'm not paying it back. So, Melody, it's good to be entitled.
Yes, truly. And it was a pleasure to be here for this hour with you and with the listeners. I encourage everyone to join us tomorrow. We'll be back at the same time. Until then, be safe, good night, and God bless. Thank you, Dave.
Bye-bye. Thank you. Bye.
That's too bad.